This is Conversations That Count. I'm Brent Cunningham. This is part three of a conversation that I had with Wes Tucker. Wes Tucker serves as a missionary for Arab World Ministries. Wes's goal is to reach Arab-speaking Muslims with the gospel. And Wes's goal is to do that by educating people on what Islam is and taking away some of the barriers that are oftentimes in our minds when we think about sharing the gospel with Muslims. So I hope you'll join us in this conversation and be as challenged as we have been. Wes, probably the biggest reason why we're even having this conversation is to ask this question. Can Muslims be reached with the message of Jesus?
You know, I think in our minds today here in the West, we look at this and we think that's an impossible task. Not many of us even know any Muslims living in our community, much less those that might have come out of Islam to Christ. So we think it's an impossible task. And I will admit, it is a hard task. People that have grown up living and breathing and eating Islam their whole lives, and also being told that what we believe about Jesus is false, have a real hard time understanding the gospel, first of all, much less accepting it. And when a Muslim does accept Christ, he's faced with a whole other array of issues in his family, in his community. He's often rejected. Sometimes in Muslim societies they can be killed, and we've seen that in the news here recently, where this fellow in Afghanistan, Abdul Rahman, who became a Christian when he was living and working, I believe it was in Pakistan, and once he returned to Afghanistan, was placed under arrest for having converted to Christianity, and was nearly sentenced to death under Sharia law in that country. Through public protest, he was able to come out of there. But the point is that Muslims, if they do come to Christ, face extreme pressures from society and family. Having said that, God is doing great things in the Muslim world all around the world. We got to see it a lot firsthand when we were living in France. Right now in France, they say there's probably anywhere from 5,000 to 6,000 converts from Islam to Christ. And the beautiful thing about what we call MBBs, or Muslim background believers, is that they are beginning to take the message forward into the Muslim community themselves. And if you go to nearly any major city in France now, you can find what we call oasis groups. And oasis groups are Muslim background believers that come together for fellowship, usually once a month, for meal, for worship. But they also invite their Muslim friends and family members to attend so that they can hear the gospel too. And it's an extremely powerful movement because it's former Muslims sharing Christ with Muslims. So they can see that it is possible. There's good news coming out of almost every Muslim country in the world right now. I just heard that yesterday the number of secret believers that live in Saudi Arabia is continuing to grow. And, of course, Saudi Arabia is probably one of the most repressive regimes against Christianity on earth right now. I have friends who are missionaries in Indonesia who tell me that the gospel is going forward there. A wonderful movement in Algeria among the Berber people. That the government is not able to even contain or do anything about. We can speak of real revival happening in Algeria. Churches are forming all across Morocco. And these are just highlights of things happening around the world today. There are many Muslims coming to Christ, and they're being reached not only by missionaries, but also by radio and television and satellite programs. For the first time, they can, you know, get Christian programming right in their own homes, which is revolutionary, because traditionally speaking, most Muslim societies have been able to prohibit the entrance of Christian thought or literature so that it won't reach Muslims, and now it is reaching Muslims, and the impact is growing.
Now, if we think about that, in our culture, Muslims who are living here have a phenomenal opportunity to hear about the gospel. Tell me a little bit about the gentleman that you were talking about earlier, who actually was a student here some time ago, a few decades ago, had that opportunity, and I think that speaks a little bit to maybe our missed opportunity, our meaning the church.
Exactly. Yeah, there was several decades ago, as you say, a student who came from Egypt named Sayyid Qutb, and he was over in Greeley at the University of Northern Colorado as a foreign exchange student. He came over as a moderate Muslim, left here as a radical extremist Muslim.
So he came here almost as a little bit of a secularist, influenced by secularism.
That's right. He was very eager to learn why the West was successful. What were the good points of our society, our culture, even Christianity? He was anxious to see what made this culture successful. But in the end, he became very disillusioned with both. He was invited, one vignette is that he was invited to a church in Greeley for a youth function, and they were holding a dance down in the basement of a church. And he thought, well, compared to Islam, this is very decadent and debauched behavior. And if this is Christianity, then I want to oppose it. I don't want to have anything to do with it. Now, Sayyid Qutb went home to Egypt and became one of the founders of the extremist group called the Muslim Brotherhood. This was the group that assassinated Anwar Sadat. And in fact, Qutb himself was put to death by President Nasser in 1966 because he was considered to be so dangerous. The Muslim Brotherhood is a group that influenced Osama bin Laden with their views and their doctrines. So we see the importance of reaching someone with the truth of the gospel and what kind of impact that can have in the Muslim world, not just on a small scale, but very much on a grand scale. So that's why I am all about trying to help local Christians get in touch with local Muslims that are studying or working here and befriending them and helping them to see who Christ is.
That story of Sayyid Qutb is so significant in my mind as I hear that, because while that's not to say Christians shouldn't dance or anything along those lines, I think it goes to say there was a missed opportunity there that the church had. Here, this man was in our backyard. He was our neighbor. And with the influence that we could have had, and I don't know what sort of surroundings were around him, and I don't know what all went on, but it just brings up in my mind opportunity, missed opportunity. And then looking forward, not to just be depressed about that, but to say, who are the people who are here right now, maybe over at UNC, maybe at CSU, maybe working, maybe they could be in the cubicle next to me at work, that I can have an impact upon, not just one life, although that's infinitely important, but the ripple effect. What kind of influence are they going to have on others? Talk to me a little bit about the kind of influence, the kind of doorways is a phrase that you use a lot, the kind of doorways that we can make into our Muslim neighbors.
Right. I always say that if there's 50,000 Muslims here in Colorado, and jokingly I say there's probably 50,000 churches, all we need to do is match up one whole church for each Muslim here, and we can, do a lot of sharing of the gospel with them. That's facetious, of course. But we do have a majority. We do have a numerical advantage. The problem is, Brent, will Christians take the opportunities that we have? And I just want to urge anybody that might be listening that Muslims in this country are, for the most part, very approachable. One of the ways that I found them to be the most exciting and fun is teaching English as a second language. And most university campuses will have a program like that. Now, I'm not a teacher. I'm not an English teacher. But I go as a volunteer. I don't have to prepare anything. I just have to be available for conversation.
You have to know English.
I have to know English. That's the only requirement. And the fun thing is that two-thirds of my classes are Saudi men or young men from the Middle East. Now, these aren't guys running around in robes and funny hats. Mm-hmm. They wear Western clothes. They are discovering the West, and they're curious. They're having fun. They like going to movies. They like going to restaurants. They're young. A lot of them are 18, 19, 20, and they're very open to the West right now in this kind of window of opportunity that they have. So meeting them in English class is a great way to just share friendship with them. And as you share your friendship and your life with them, automatically conversations come up about faith and what we believe. And we always have opportunity to share Christ with them on some level and help them to discover what it is we really believe, because they have a lot of distorted ideas about what Christianity is about. English programs are great. There's also the Muslim student associations on campuses are probably just as active as any campus crusade organization across the nation. And they sponsor lots of activities during the school year that we can attend. conferences, dinners, different events, and that is a place where a lot of Christians could attend and meet and befriend Muslim students. We kind of turn the tables on them. Now, a lot of the Muslim student events are meant to be Islamic outreaches to American Christians or just Westerners. But if we meet them and share Christ with them, then we can use their event for Christ's purposes. Other ways to get in contact with Muslims is universities are usually looking for host families, either to house a foreign student or just be a foreign student's friend, maybe once a month going to dinner or taking them bowling or taking them on a picnic or inviting them to a family event. Host families can do a lot to befriend Muslims. For those people who know something academically, there's a lot of tutoring opportunities. You just need to get in touch with your local university to find out what those might be. Right here in Fort Collins, they have what they call a Friday afternoon club over at the International House, which is an international dormitory. And we are all invited to come about 6 o'clock for Friday afternoon club for a dinner and just kind of hang out with the students there, get to know them, befriend them. I mean, these are no-brainer opportunities that the university offers us. And then apart from the university, there are different little shops here in town that are owned by Muslims or frequented by Muslims. One is called Nargila Nights. If you like to smoke a water pipe, you can go and meet a lot of students that hang out over there for tea, coffee, and a smoke. There are some international markets here in town that Muslims like to go to. And Starbucks, of course, is a great place to meet Muslims because they like to hang out and drink coffee. So you can do cafe evangelism. What I'm trying to say is that there are really, really easy ways that don't take much preparation, and you can befriend all the Muslims you can shake a stick at.
You know, Wes, one thing that is encouraging for me to see is just, you know, how the tide is turning. We talk about how these Muslim students from Saudi and other places are coming here, and from one perspective, you could look at that and say, this is the outgrowth of, you know, Sharia law. They're, in a sense, trying to convert the world. But I think we could also look at this realizing that the God of the Bible is sovereign. He's in control. And realizing that this might be actually God engineering. I heard a statistic that said approximately 80% of Muslims have never heard the good news, which would make Muslims the least evangelized people in the world.
That's right.
As a people group. So, you know, as we think about some of this, you know, what we can do, you know, how do we reach them? And I've heard you talk about this, and maybe, you know, maybe we want to just hit a couple points. Okay, let's suppose I actually have a relationship with a Muslim. What are some of the things that I need to have in my mind to be sure that that open door stays open? I've heard you talk about this one, is just obey Jesus' command to look like Jesus, in a sense. Live a life that is Christ-honoring. Because from what I've heard from you, one of the biggest turnoffs to Muslims, and this doesn't just touch on Muslims, this could be an atheist or a person of another religious group. One of the biggest turnoffs is a Christian who talks one way and walks another.
Definitely. You know, you definitely have to walk your talk when you're working with, well, I think we all should anyway,
yeah.
But I think Muslims in particular are looking out for a moral stance. And it's amazing to me how frequent those types of discussions come up about premarital sex, about drinking, about promiscuity, about drugs. These are the things that they see in our society that they think are morally corrupt, which they are, and that they think they have an advantage on. Now, we need to always present, and I know I never pull any punches this way, just present the biblical stance. They're surprised to hear that the Bible is against premarital sex, for example. They're surprised to hear that the Bible speaks against being drunk, for example. I do think we also need to avoid taking sides in political issues about what's happening in the Middle East. I always try to help them understand that God is for everyone. God loves people on both sides of any issue, and what he wants most of all is for us to come and submit to him and worship him. So I don't get drawn into any disputes about the Jews or Israel or Palestine.
Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that there aren't issues of justice you know, when it comes to matter of war and certain people groups, but it's possible, as I hear you saying, to maybe kind of lay that aside and not allow that to be an additional offense or an additional obstacle to presenting the gospel.
Exactly. Our goal is to make sure that Christ is presented. If we want them to know anything, it's just the gospel truth. And I always try to draw it back into what is man's position vis-a-vis God? What does God think of us? What has he done for us? And leave these peripheral issues for another day. I don't want to spend my time talking about politics and never help them to see who Jesus is. They've got to see who Jesus is.
For more information on this audio recording or others like it, go to www.brentcunningham.org. All Bible passages read on this recording were from the New International Version, unless otherwise noted.